show up eventually, or maybe not. One never knows. By the sound of that show they played last night, he deserves a break, I believe. But good to see you. Nice to see all these mandolins here. All right. So we ought to do this like a real workshop. What the heck? Well, first things first. Take the pick out of the string so it doesn't sound like this. Let's see. Is this on? Are you getting something there? I hear it in the monitor, and that's nice. You can turn it up a bit. It says number 11 on it. Yeah, is it good out there? You guys are happy? I'm happy. A little bit more. Well, good morning. Good festival so far? Yeah, it sounds like you could take some highs off that. I like it kind of dark. Mandolins are already naturally so bright, you know. So high and chirpy. Thank you. Woken up here. That was the old Joe Clark. Everybody know that one? All right. Let's see. What else have we got up our sleeve? Mandolin workshop. I love seeing all these mandolins here. This is a wonderful thing. I come from Florida. Hey, I grew up down here. This is how I got into the music was as a little teenage boy. We had our band, the Sunshine Bluegrass Boys. And we used to go around to all the festivals. This is about 1971. I was 4 years old then. And so, this is what turned me on to music in general. And in those days, there was a lot of really cool, adventurous stuff going on with the music. People like Sam Bush and David Grisman, of course, were my heroes, and as they are still today. But those guys busted open the cosmic bluegrass egg way back, and I think a big part of what made their playing so great was they loved a lot of different kinds of music. You know, they grew up on rock and roll, and they were hearing world music for the first time, music from all over the place, and jazz, and so they incorporated a lot of that into bluegrass, their bluegrass background. So. I guess I continued on that path and ended up joining David Grisman's band with my buddy Daryl Anger there, who you just saw. And that was a really exciting time for me to move out to California from here and get to play with people I consider to be my heroes. Tony Rice was in the group at that time. And, you know, we'd go on the road and people like Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer and Jerry Douglas would sit in with the group. So, that was graduate school for me. Touring with Stephan Grappelli and stuff like that. You learn it on the job. That's pretty much how I did it. So, you know, just there isn't a real formal place to study the mandolin these days. You can't really go to a university and have it be your major. Unlike in places like Germany, where you actually can do that and study classical mandolin at that level. So most of us just do as we can, just grab the instrument, start playing, and just trying to find a way to make it sound good. Watch our heroes and copy them. That's pretty much what I did. And it's kind of devising a method, slowly but surely, for how to play these darn things. Working it all out. So I'm kind of big on how to hold the darn thing. That's a big one for me. I'm teaching online now, along with Daryl Anger. There's this Academy of Bluegrass. Some of you may know it. I think we have some students here even who have signed up. It's a pretty cool new way to learn, where it's called a video exchange, where if you're signed up to the service, you can send me a video of yourself playing, and then I'll send a response video back, and these two videos will be linked, and they go to the website. And then anybody who is signed up to the service can watch that lesson if they want. So it's a continuously growing library of amazing lessons that you get to see, and of course you have your own personal kind of connection with me, and we work on things together. And, some people are shy and they'd rather not send a video, or sometimes they cut their head off and all you see is the mandolin. That's okay. But it's really a great way for me to kind of get inside and really see exactly what people are doing and then help them out, you know. And it's a real friendly environment. Everybody on the school is super supportive. You can do little messages to people after you've seen their video. You can write little blurbs underneath their video exchange saying, "Great job, man, sounds great. You sound better than last time," and whatnot. So I encourage you to check that out. That's Mike Marshall School of Mandolin. So anyway, it's got this whole lesson plan where I go into great detail about, beginner, intermediate, advanced, and really kind of break the thing down from the beginning. And a big one for me, like I said, is holding. You'll notice I'm using my case here to have one leg on. That's a big one for me. You'll see classical guitarists doing that also, where they use a footstool. And I always, to me, it's all about holding the darn thing so that it's really stabilized. You know, and getting this leg up helps. Getting the headstock up a little bit so it's not parallel with the ground. You'll see some players doing this, or sometimes over one shoulder, sometimes leaning back on the couch. You know that move, right? And that's kind of you have to kind of get it all situated to me in order to free up this hand to do the work, so that this hand isn't holding up the neck. That's really what's going on here. So I get it, the three points of contact are the left leg, right leg, and the chest, and kind of leaning over it. You know, you'll see Chris Thiele playing the same way. It's like that. And what he's doing is he's trying to cradle the instrument so that, you know, if you're doing this, then you're spending a lot of energy holding up the neck, right? And then it's very hard to shift positions, and even doing chords, you're kind of, half your energy's going to holding the darn thing. So that's kind of that's one thing I've been saying. Sam Bush used to make fun of me for having a footstool when I played with the Modern Mandolin Quartet. But if you see him in the studio recording, he's got his little box that he keeps his strings in right under that foot. So, and you'll see Bela Fleck playing the banjo the same way. He'll put this foot up on the side and put this foot on it and then play. You know, it's the same thing is going on. They're trying to get the instrument stabilized. You know, if you take violin and you go down and study from the little lady down the street, any town has a great violinist. Well, they'll tell you to put the violin under your chin, get a shoulder rest, and keep your wrist angled like this, and then here's how you hold the bow. You know, you get these fingers like so. And there's a methodology that, you know, Suzuki and all of that. Well, you know, years ago, fiddlers would just stick the thing under their chest and hold their hand like this and choke up on the bow and do whatever they could, right? Because they weren't having those kind of formal lessons. But, you know, that makes it a little hard to go up the neck. They mostly played in first position. Some good fiddlers, mind you. But you know, nowadays, even fiddlers that maybe don't read music understand, you know, proper classical violin technique, proper way to hold the instrument so you can do the most with it. Mandolin is kind of stuck in this folk realm of, like, well, I don't know, I just play. I never thought about it. And I kind of, you know, feel like one mandolin player at a time, I'm trying to help them. Okay, hold it like this and get this, the whole business with the right hand. I tell people, if you do this with your hand, like how to hold the pick. If you put your hand on your leg like this, notice how you're, so that the wrist is dangling off the knee. Notice how your fingers naturally curl a tiny amount, right? If they're super relaxed, the wrist is relaxed. That's about how much your finger, that's how your hand should look when you then put the pick on the index finger and put the thumb on it. Then bring that to the instrument. That's pretty much your right hand. And you let the hand rest on the bridge, the strings behind the bridge. You let it graze back there. Because sometimes you'll see people playing like this. And it's like you're waving a big flag out. And it's doing something with the balance. It's very hard to play a good upstroke when you when you've got all this stuff dangling underneath. Or sometimes people will mount here. And that to me disrupts the flow of down and upstrokes. So I understand the need to anchor somewhere, but I recommend that it be back here. You'll see I've got like a green stain from the bronze on the strings. It's permanent. Just letting it graze back there. Is this really boring to you guys? I'm what you call a Mando nerd of the highest order. I actually have thought about this stuff. Can you imagine? I'd be doing something else with my time, couldn't I? No. This is good. Do this. Okay. Oh, that's why you're here. Okay. So then, shall I continue? It's going to last about 35 hours. It's okay, you got time? Then it's like the action of the pick. So you got four strings, right? So you have a limited number of possible combinations of downs and ups. You can play the G string down and the D string up. G down, A up, G down, E up. Okay, so that's a, like a nice open string exercise. Do each of those combinations four times, right? But now if you use, say, the D string as your pivot note, D, A, D, A, D, E, D, E, D, G. Wow, that's a weird one. Down on the D, up on the G, because, let's say this is E, this is A, this is D, this is G. When you play the D first and then the A, the pick's already going in that direction. But when you play the D and then the G, the pick's going away from the note you want to play. And this is the weirdest move for us mandolin players. You know, many of you have probably been playing a long time and never thought about this. But I did. So what has to happen is the pick has to... Your wrist has to almost do a figure eight-like motion in order to get back up there and play that G with an upstroke. But it's a very tiny figure eight. But it's something to think about. And I've got a book called The Great Book of Finger Busters, which is just tons of these goofy exercises. I mean, there's like 10 pages of open strings, okay? All right, then if you use the A string as the pivot note, A and E is easy, right? Because you're going in that direction anyway. A to D is a little trickier. But then when you go A to G, down on the A, up on the G, wow, that's really whacked out because you got to skip over one string, right? So this is something to practice. Because what happens is people play a tune and then they have a spot in the tune that they're like, oh, I can never play that song. Oh, that's that weird part. Oh, what the heck's going on there? And chances are, 9 times out of 10, that it's really the right hand that's causing the trouble. That there's something about the down-ups that you're not making that move to get over that string, to do that little thing. So then you practice E to A, and that's the really weird one because all of the strings are not where you want them to be. E, A, E, D, and E, G. A couple other things. Very important to keep this index finger curled. It's a no-no to keep the index finger straight. What happens when you curl the finger, it actually brings your hand closer to the strings. Weird. When you keep the index straight, notice how everything wants to sort of flop, and the hand's kind of far away from it forces the hand, the center part of the hand, far away from the strings. Weird, I know. You're looking at me like, this guy's, he's out. He went all the way off the Anyway, this is all stuff that I've spent a lot of time thinking of. Any questions out there? We could open it up now to anybody having right hand issues? No. Okay, good. Can I take lessons from you, please? No. How to break the pinky? Post it. How to not do that? Just stop. No, I thought I explained it. It's really the anchor should be back here, and so you have something to hold on to. I understand the need to rest somewhere, but that one's gonna really, the action, I think when people do this, the action is then coming from, it's pivoting off of the arm maybe. And really the action should pivot off the wrist. You know, it's a very small motion. It makes me think of the young violinists who play like this. They call it frog pond, you know. And you're supposed to keep the wrist like this. And there was some mean Russian teacher who put thumbtacks on the neck so that if they ever went up there, they would, you know, be bruised for life. You could put something that really is painful right there, so you never touch it, you know, a cactus on the man. just stop. And it is very hard to undo stuff, undoing bad habits. Boy, that's really, it's very easy to do something wrong for years and years, and it takes unbelievable focus to start to do something right and make a good new habit. I'm trying to learn German right now, so God, the brain is just not what it used to be, right? Unbelievable how many times I have to learn the same word. God. Pimsleur talks about that, yes? Quick direction. It's huge. Pick direction, yeah. Quarter notes versus eighth notes. Quarter notes are the quick ones. I'm sorry, quarter notes it depends on what you're looking at. There are slow notes and there are fast notes. Okay, the basic principle, and it's something I see a lot in my lessons that people make this mistake, always go down on the downbeat, up on the upbeat. So if you're playing dum da 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 da, it's gotta be da 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 da. No matter the string changing. That's why that open string exercise stuff is so important. What people accidentally do is they go down, down, up, down, down. Because the next string is down, they go double down. Or they go double up because they're going down, down, up, down, up, up. Because they just did an up and the next string they want to play is in this direction, so they let the hand keep going. That's a 9-9. Next. You're not allowed to do that. It's very hard to break, too, because if you've learned a tune and you're playing it fast, it then becomes muscle memory, and you don't even realize you're doing it. So you got to break that thing all the way back down to this tempo. Dun, da, 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 oop, 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 oop. No, da, 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 oops. Oh, God, there it is again. Da, 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 da. I hate you, Mike Marshall. Da, da, da. Oh, this is killing me. But that's the place you'll have to be in order to undo something like that. But it'll ramp up really fast, and as soon as you feel it and feel how it feels, it'll become a physical sensation that your body will memorize it, and then it'll be okay, and you'll be able to get it back. So, down on the downbeats, follow your foot. So a tune like Old Joe Clark, dun, da, da, so that's down, down, up, because really the hand never stops doing this. So if you're playing da 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 da, that's down, 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 up, down, up, down, 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 up, down, up, down. If you were to play it with all eighth notes, it would be down, up, down, up, down, up, down, da 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 da. This is a big one. This is a really, really big one. I see so many students doing the double downs, double ups. Great question. Yes, sir. Celtic triplets. Down, let's see. Down, up, down, down, up, down, down, up, down, down, up, down. That's what Marla Feibisch says. And I believe her. She's great. So you get two downs in a row. Down, up, down, down, up, down, down. And so the downs are always nice and strong. Yes, sir? Somebody in the back had one? You had a question? You were going to ask that one? Yeah, that's... And check out Marla. She's really a wizard at that stuff. But anyway, yeah. What about rhythm playing? So when you play rhythm, then the hand comes off of the bridge, right? I'm no longer doing this. Now I'm pivoting from back there. Too quiet, ain't it? So notice how I'm lifting the left hand. And that creates that nice mute. If you leave it held down, you end up with this kind of sound. Right? It's just not as swingy. The lifting of the strings creates a part of rhythm. Now, when you go to a bluegrass chop, y'all know this is the chord you see all the bluegrass guys playing. This is what Bill Monroe really gave us. It's an A chord. 9-7-4-5. It's a bluegrass chop chord. It's what really drove the bluegrass bands. When you think about mandolin players before Bill Monroe, most of them were playing round hole instruments, and they were playing a kind of open string style with really simple two-finger chords and letting it ring like that. But what Bill figured out was that if you do this closed position chord and you just pop it, it works really good in a band. It's the backbeat. So the bass player is playing. So the mandolin's hitting right after the bass. And notice how I'm not doing anything but the chop. It's that. I mean, that would function as well as the mandolin. It's really a snare drum now, right? And what you'll see a lot of people doing is they start to play rhythm on the mandolin and they'll do this. And it's just totally cluttering up the sound of the band. It sounds like rain on the roof. You can't hear nothing but the rain. What you want, especially when you have a guitar player who's already doing that, and a lot of mandolin players come from guitar. So the guitar is a very ringy, open sound. And the banjo is playing the 16th notes, right? So he's filling it up. He's the rain. What you are is the fence post. And that makes the rain sound really good. So you don't want anything else but that in your bluegrass band. That makes the bass player really happy, and the guitar player too. I tell people, when you do a chop, it should be something we call the bark. And that's just the low two strings, really. You'll see a lot of bluegrass players just do it where they just do two fingers. Just the 9th and the 7th fret, and that's it. They're not playing the high strings at all. If you play the high strings too much, you get this sound. And if you let it ring too long, you don't want to keep these held down too long. You want this, just the puh, that part of the sound. So there's my little lecture. Sorry to get on a soapbox here, but it's just stuff I keep seeing, you know. I mean, I've got a whole bunch of students now on this online thing, and they send me videos of them playing with their group sometimes, which is really cool to see. But that's a very common one that I see. If you watch Sam Bush play, he's the master, you know, he's the rhythm master. And what you realize is he's playing stuff that's very simple, you know. I mean, all it is this incredible backbeat, and it's just placed exactly where you want it, you know. It's the same aesthetic that great drummers have about, you know, can you play, where is ba in relationship to ba, you know. And yunju cha, that's the guitar player, ba is you, ba. So you have to, a bluegrass band is this beautiful collection of gears. Everyone has their spot within the framework of the grid. It's almost like a great drummer has four things going on. A great bluegrass band, each guy is one of the limbs. The bass player is this. I think of the guitar as like the washiness of the ride cymbals, right? The banjo is the hi-hat. It's the 16th notes. And your mandolin is just that snare. Is that making sense? What about Brazilian music? Thank you. love hearing that thunder once in a while. So that's a basic Brazilian groove. Da 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 da. Sing that. Da 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 da. Now keep doing that. Now a couple of you big guys in the back go. The lowest voice in the house. Now you ladies have to be the little shaker. It's just 16 notes continuous. So those are the three components in Brazilian music. You have these percussion instruments. Da 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 is usually played by a little drum with a skin head, and you hit it with a stick. Ga 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 ga. The shaker and the big drum. Notice how the drum is on beat two. One, two, one, two, one, two. That's very different than most American musics, where we have the big kick drum on the one, boom, 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 boom. Or we have it on both really heavy, like for rock and roll. But in Brazil, the heavy beat is the second beat. And that's what gives it that characteristic Brazilian feeling, what makes you want to walk on the beach forever. Basic explanation of what's going on with Brazilian music. What shocked me is that there's a great mandolin tradition in Brazil. All those Italians, I guess, they came to America with their mandolins in New York, and somehow eventually those mandolins made their way to the South, and black string bands started using them, and white old timey bands, and it was always the little brother who played the mandolin, right? Little Jimmy, you play the mandolin. Here, I got this at the pound shop. But apparently the same thing happened in Brazil. You had all these Italian immigrants going there, and then you have this great mandolin tradition that grows out of those immigrants. Slightly different shape instrument nowadays. It's a round hole instrument with a flat back. Pretty much like a Gibson, but it's not a carved top instrument. It's a flat top. But still the same as the mandolin. They call it a bandolim. It's just the Portuguese name for mandolin. But the real master, the sort of Bill Monroe figure for Brazilian mandolin, was a guy named Jacob do Bandolim. And he was he just wrote like probably 1,000 incredible tunes, and they sort of formed the real catalog of tunes that you see people playing. But of course there have been many who came before him and after, who continue to add to this great tradition. He wrote a very famous song called Noites Cariocas, which means Rio Nights, or the Nights of the... A carioca is someone from Rio de Janeiro. So, yeah, give me that. da 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 Brazilian mandolin. I fell in love with that style. I went down there actually with Daryl the first time in 1995. And I had known about Jacob. I had some of the recordings and knew that he was a master and amazing mandolin player. But when I got there and realized, oh my God, there's a whole scene here. Young people playing this music. It's just like bluegrass. You know, you got people in the little cafes. And you got festivals and stuff. And it's alive and well. But it hadn't really made it up to the States yet. Now you have a lot of groups learning the music up here, and people are really sharing a lot about this music. And it's kind of having a bit of a renaissance here in the States, anyway, as mandolin players. Yes, sir. If you're a beginner, what's something you can practice just to get something going, huh? To get out of first position. Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. Well, one of the things I was told to do, which kind of changed my life, I went to see a violinist and I was playing, you know, on violin, the first position, you know, just liberty. And she said, well, why don't you play that same notes but go up the neck? Play the same melody up there and just go on a search for where it sits, you know? So then all of a sudden I was like, oh my God. So if I start with my A note, with my first finger, my gosh, that's going to make it really weird. But that's a great way to kind of, that's one method. Just say, okay, I'm going to start that with my first finger. That would be one way. Another thing you can do is learn a closed position chord, for instance. Like you got an A chord, right? This is 2, 2, 4, 5. And learn where the root of that note or that chord is down here on the second fret. That's your A note. So wherever you put that, if you bring it up 2 frets, that's a B. If you bring it up 1 fret, that's a C. And you learn, oh, okay, this is a movable chord now. And I should be able to play that anywhere on the fingerboard. I mean, you probably already know this, right? Here, you're talking more about lead, stuff? Playing scales. All right, so scale-wise, I would do the same. Is that right? Just in the nick of time, Ronnie was saving me. They were asking how to play up the neck. And I was about to get theoretical on them. Would you please yank me back to earth? We've already been to Brazil.
Oh, I miss you.
But they were asking about how to play up the neck.
Oh, man.
God. Do you ever play up in the rosin?
Not like you.
Well, good
There's no money past the fifth fret.
That's what Norman Blake said, right?
Well, I'm sorry, see you, man. I'm sorry to be so late here.
It's all right.
I got came to the wrong spot, and for it's one okay. thing, among other many things.
My dog ate my homework, too. No, you deserve it. I heard that set last night was just killing. Daryl came back raging about it. Thank you for that.
It was late if it wasn't anything else.
I missed class, too, by not being there. Dang it all.
I'm sure that you have just blown everybody's mind, including mine, and I wasn't even here.
I have not done anything. I'm just sitting here biding my time.
Do you feel at home while you're here?
I'm with my people.
That's yes. right. The Gator is home.
I do. It's great to be back. Yes, sir. Grew up here. The Sunshine Bluegrass Boys.
Yeah, man.
We had our Winnebago with our name painted on the side. Fried chicken and beans and sweet tea every Friday. We'd head out to the nearby festival.
That's awesome. Well, I know I'm intruding here. You were talking about something.
No.
And it's not very much time left.
Well, he was asking about playing up the neck, and I told him I was about to say, you know, learn a scale in a closed position. Just a simple A scale. And then wherever you start that, if you started here on a C note, the fingering is going to be the same. It's now a C scale. You know, that's really the kind of the heart of the beauty of mandolin is that we're tuned symmetrically. So no matter where we are, it's going to look the same as where we just were. The other thing that's really great is to learn just some simple double stops. Those can be used so effectively in bluegrass especially, and then simply move that up two frets and it's an A. So I'll use things like that when I'm trying to think about what to play up the neck. You also don't have to play a lot of notes if you tremolo.
That's right.
That's always good. So that's kind of like the starting point, but of course it's a gigantic world. It's a big question.
Yeah.
Right?
You're the big answer to the big question. You're right in the middle of the gigantic mandolin world.
I told him that I'm watching.
You're so lucky to have him here. I mean, this is one of the greatest that's ever been on this instrument.
I told him I'm an ultimate mandolin nerd now. That's... But Ronnie, you're the real deal, man. All I do is study it. You actually do it.
Nah.
You're out there hitting it, man. How's this band? How is it playing with God, Peter? I bet you guys didn't even rehearse for that. If I know you, you just got up and played, didn't you? But jeez. There's a body of tunes that everybody knows. That's the beauty of this style, I guess.
Yeah. That was fun last night. We'll do it again today. Let's pick one.
There you go. Let's do that.
Thank you.
There you go. They tell us we only got about 4 minutes. Yeah, you guys must have some questions for this fine fellow. There's no better mandolin player in the world.
Yeah.
So now's your time to fire away. We got one back there. What do we like for string?
Wow, okay. Well, I used the D'Addario strings for a long time because they went ahead and I asked for a little heavier gauge than normal, and it happens to be a, I guess what started it all was the A string. I always liked the 16, a little heavier A. And then I got 11.5 E string, 26 D, and a 41 G, kind of a bigger one. I played pretty hard, you know. Too hard. I play too hard, but I do.
You have a banjo in the band.
That's right.
I actually like that set he's talking about. I right now I have the, what we call a regular medium set. It's 11, 15, 24, 40, I think. But I've experimented with that set. What's cool about that is you can actually lower your action a little bit and not have it buzz with the slightly heavier string. Mm. So I like playing around with that idea. If you go with the lighter string, then you raise your action. So
you're using the lighter string?
I'm using the lighter one.
Because of the music you're playing at this time? Or?
It could be that when I play with Psychograss, a five-piece band, I put on the heavier set. I think I do like what you're doing, but I'm not so fussy about it right now. It's more an action thing. It seems to move around so much when you travel like we do. Do you find yourself raising and lowering?
Yeah, especially going out west a lot, and then you know how that goes.
Oh, it's so dry in Colorado. Then the action goes way down.
Down here, it's kind of like Tennessee. It's a lot of humidity, so.
You come back from Colorado and your mandolin looks like a Dobro.
Yeah.
It's crazy stuff. Something about the water getting in there makes it expand. Somebody else? Do we use 3-note chords, he's asking.
Well, I mean.
Sometimes two.
Yeah, right.
I was telling him about the chop. Sometimes you just play the bottom two strings.
That's right. It's the especially when you're playing bluegrass, you get the meat out of the chop. When you just
that's it.
That's just playing. Basically, you're hearing the top two. Of course, a lot of the chords are just three string chords too.
There's a whole thing on jazz mandolin where, you're playing these three string chords. And I like thinking of it as like the root position. And then this one has the third in the bottom, 3, 1, 5. And this one has the fifth in the bottom. So I think of those three as like the main three that I kind of build jazz chords out of. And those are three note chords. I actually wrote a whole book on it. Huh. Buy my book. Join my website. Free picture and an ink pen. Early Ray Klein style keychains. No, that's the 3-note chords are great on mandolin. That's plenty. We're tuned so high that if we just get a couple of notes sometimes in there, it's plenty.
Yeah, no. If you're playing like the higher strings, you have the open G string, so you can't really play the chop, when you have that open. I know that you haven't been playing too long, right? We met, he hasn't been playing too long, so if you want to play like a chop for the rhythm in the band, you kind of have to close the chord,
Yeah, I was telling him about that. You only want the bottom part.
Yeah, he's got it.
You don't want the... You don't want that splatty, buzzy thing up top. Yeah, you want the bark. So, well, heck, maybe we ought to just play another one. They'll kick us off the stage now, after they hear this. Can we go out gentle, or are we going to tear it up?
One more time.
Tear it up. Rick, let's see. Tear it up. open up the